I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Bill Roden of ESPN's The Undefeated.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and we are the sports reporters. Welcome to the Monday Morning Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, and glad to have you joining us here. And wow, I mean, it's dangerous to do a podcast the morning after a World Series game because you're not quite sure, first of all, if the game is going to be over yet by the time you do it. We are watching some kind of weird, wonderful World Series. Certainly not for the faint of heart. A 10-inning affair again last night with home runs galore. This is how it sounded when it finally ended.
Two on, two out. 10th inning. That's in the air to left. Here comes Fisher. Throw by Ethier. Astros win it in 10.
That sound courtesy of the MLB on Fox. Alex Bregman capping off. I mean, it was just a remarkable, remarkable game. Bob, I mean, are we witnessing a classic here? And can it go seven? I mean, that's the only thing missing. You would think the Dodgers are down, but they're going back to L.A.
Going to L.A., where in home field, as I've always believed, is not that consequential in baseball as a rule. But it's all about pitching regardless. This has been a fascinating series. I think I love it. I think it's one of the great World Series of all time. And didn't we all say after game two, boy, they'll have a hard time topping that?
Yeah.
And then we had this thing last night, 13-12. I guess if you were, for some people who were purists, if you will, every sport has them. I'm kind of one in certain ways in baseball, but who don't like the idea of 13-12. It's funny, but when it was 9-8, guys, I tweeted that there was once a World Series game 15-14. I said, are we heading for another one? And that was that famous game between the Phillies and the Blue Jays in 93, which I was privileged to cover. And so we've seen something like this before, but not too often.
I've been so wrong on that. I mean, first of all, this is great. I mean, are they still hitting home runs?
You just hit another one while we were talking.
But I've been so wrong. I like L.A. to win. And so at so many points in this game, you know how we both do. I mean, we all do it. You probably don't admit to doing it. But so when the Dodgers are up 3-0, remember this was going to be this great pitcher's duel, right? I mean, this is going to be this great pitcher's duel. So the Dodgers are up 3-0, and I'm like, uh-oh, we're done. You know, we're kind of out of here. You know, then 4-4. Then when the Dodgers went up 7-4, I said, this is it for sure. You know, we got them. I mean, I was wrong until every step of the way. But you know what? I had to remind myself that Houston, there's a reason why they are the best offensive team in the majors, and they're proving it. This is just. And by the way, I love the train. Is it a train whistle? What is it? It's not a horn. What is it? It's like I love it.
A whistle.
It's
train whistle.
It's not really quite a whistle. Yeah. But anyway, I love it. I love the train sound effects. Only thing about Houston
side,
I like.
The flip side of great hitting, of course, is that you know pitching has to be the sacrificed at the right. altar, and it is pretty amazing with the kind of pitching that we have in this series. The Clayton Kershaws, Dallas Keuchel, Justin Verlander, all of them have been victims of home runs here. Yeah. All of them have exited games because of home runs, and I mean. Kershaw got his in the fourth inning, Yuri Gurriel's shot, and obviously Keuchel was the shortest stint that he's had in who knows what, and even Verlander in back what seems like 100 years ago in Game Two,
right.
Faced that as well. So, but what I thought, and Kelly Jansen, that's the other one. I mean, you know, he's supposed to be untouchable, and look what happened to him. In the 10th inning. And Bob, we have seen this, and this is the most remarkable thing to me of this World Series. All the two-out drama. Mm-hmm. The two-out drama. I mean, you think two outs, when you know, you're watching on TV and you're deciding when to go to the bathroom, you know, when you see two outs, nobody on, you usually figure, the inning's almost over. You can't do that here.
No, I mean,
look at the 10th. Two outs, nobody on, then hit by pitch, a walk, and then the end of the game.
You're talking to somebody from Boston, so, you know, we kind of have the ultimate two-out, nobody-on scenario, you know, looming for forever and ever in 1986. But the thing last night starts with a hit batsman, and then the walk, and the part I loved was having the guy on the bench for one reason, Derek Fisher, and the reason came up to be the pinch runner, because if an average runner is on base, he's not scoring on that base hit, and certainly McCann would have been out by 25 feet, but. Yeah. You know, but he did his job. He came up and he had one job to do, and he did it. And he did it beautifully.
You know what I was mentioning the litany of mistakes that I had made. The other one was too, was Gurriel. So you remember? I think it was the first. It was the first inning when he made the throwing error that allowed a run to come. So then I'm thinking, okay, good. See, this is just desserts for him making him making the racist gestures and all that. You know, this is karma coming back at him. Well, he turns out to be a hero. You know, he comes back and he hits a home run. So I mean, you know, aside from me saying where's the justice, but you know, I mean, just all these the villains and the heroes, and it's just, you know, you talk about the purest, Bob. I think that baseball could not be happier for this. This is for mass consumption, as Howard Cosell said. Just what the people wanted. I think this is just what fans wanted.
I'm going to throw one caveat in on that, though. It's what the people wanted about 3 hours too late. I used to lament how late these games were going. I lamented for children because I remember being a kid, of course, you know, being glued to every World Series, and it's impossible for children to stay up to these hours. It's now impossible for adults.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many people in the sports world, sports writers who aren't covering it, obviously, who would normally, you know, never miss this, have to wake up in the morning and find out what happened. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's crazy with the population on the East Coast that we have. You know, I know it might work okay for people in Los Angeles, but, you know, let's see where the population is in this country. You cannot start these games at 8 o'clock at night or 8:30 by the time you get done. You miss everything.
I'm glad you brought up, because this kind of gets into the whole moral and ethical thing. You know, the only reason Gurriel is playing, now, this guy should have been, to me, he should have been suspended, effective immediately. Only reason he's playing is what? You know, I mean, the commissioner said, well, we don't want to punish
somebody during the World Series.
BS. That's so much BS. All these decisions, Mitch and Bob, are being made for money. I mean, and again, I know this is probably naive to say that, but, you see it repeatedly.
Well, you know, haven't we all thought of it, that if basketball had the same kind of approach that with Draymond Green 2 years ago, that the Warriors would have won. And I think only people in Cleveland would deny that. So, it was wrong. I think we all agree that this was a tap on the wrist kind of thing, and he should have been suspended.
You're right. They could have said the same thing. I don't want to belabor the point, but I forgot all about that, Bob. You're right. The NBA could have said, we're not going to suspend Draymond Green because, we don't want to punish the Cavaliers and let him play. You know, you could come up with any kind of rationale.
Well, they would have been punishing Golden State, they made it easier.
I mean, I'm saying because he didn't want to, he didn't want to penalize Golden State.
You know why I think they got away with that was because it was an infraction within the rules of the game. Mm-hmm. And so they can claim, you can't have that activity out on the court. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about stuff, even though this took place in a dugout, you're not talking about a play. You're talking about an insult of another player of Asian descent by pulling your eyes. And I love the explanation. Oh, no, it's just kind of a positive thing we do in the Latin culture. And I'm sorry, but the apologists in the media who have excused his behavior because he's Latino, were white, this is no way on earth that would be going on. Come on. I don't want to be told, well, in the Latin culture, to make fun of Chinese people, it's endearing. It's fun. It's cute. Come on. That doesn't work when everybody else tries to say I was kidding, or that's the way we talk in my family, or all the rest of it. And when you sit there and pull your eyes back and make a slur, we all know what you're doing. And if it's worth five games next year, it's not worth one game during the World Series.
Five games, by the way, in a 182 game season at the beginning in April. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's probably going to give him a check, or give him a thank you check. You know, it's again, we don't have to belabor the point, but you're right. The apologies, and we've all seen these ridiculous. The apologies are sometimes worse than the act itself.
You're right.
You know, anyway, so.
That, all right, let's, before we leave the baseball, just quickly, do the Dodgers recover from this?
They're facing
Justin Verlander in Dodger Stadium.
Oh, they can. I mean, yeah, it's not a recovery. They lost a one-run game in extra innings. I mean, it comes down to it. That's all you say to yourself. It happens all the time. It was a tough loss, but they've had tough. I don't think it's going to be traumatized or scarred. Plus, there's a day off to take a deep breath. I think they'll, I don't think that if and when they lose on Tuesday night, it's just going to be just, nature taking its course. That's all. Yeah.
Well, I'm headed to L.A. in anticipation of Game 7. Yeah. Now, given everything, all my miscalculations, this will be wrong, too.
Well, we'll see what happens out there. Let's shift over to the NFL. The NFL is now pretty much at its midway point for almost every team. And it's not, I think, the season we thought we were going to have, but you look around and you say, well, there's New England. They're up at the top of things. There's Pittsburgh. They're up at the top of things. I think probably Philadelphia, if I were saying, would be the biggest surprise given where we went into the season. But at the midway point, who's sitting at the top, and who do we think is still going to be there 8 games from now?
Who can be surprised by New England at this point? So let's just put them in a category by themselves. I'm a little surprised by Philadelphia, though I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. Sorry, Philadelphians. A little surprised by Kansas City. I guess the team that really surprises me in a pleasant is Houston. You know, Houston is just, although they lost to Seattle in a great game, Houston and Deshaun Watson have really, really pleasantly surprised me. Even with the controversy surrounding McNair and the kneeling before the game. I mean, they've really played well. I mean, they played well defensively despite losing Watts and Watson. Again, we talk about him every single week. It's just been a great and pleasant surprise for me.
No, he's been wonderful. As much as no one can say that they thought he'd be this good this fast, even though we thought maybe he would be this good eventually. But no, it's really one of the most remarkable rookie seasons so far. A year after we had a great one last year with Prescott, and it's going to be interesting to compare that when it's all said and done. To me, the biggest surprise, I guess you'd have to say, the biggest surprise maybe, the Eagles, if you can say.
7-1.
Buffalo is are they really for real in this in this division, which has been where the tyranny of the Patriots has been going on for 16 years? But they have 2 games coming up, guys, down the road. It's not going to be till December, December 3rd and December Christmas Eve. They're home against the Patriots on December 3rd, and they have they go to New England on Christmas Eve. Suddenly, those games are really looming very, very large. And as far as the biggest disappointment in the AFC, well, clearly it's got to be Oakland. No question. And the biggest disappointment in the league has to be the Giants, wouldn't you say? There were people, I know there were people in New York predicting the Giants to go to the Super Bowl. And now they're
just slightly off. They're with Bill on his World Series predictions. 1-6 is not going to get you to the Super Bowl. And by the way, Buffalo and Oakland were in that game together yesterday. And I agree with you. Buffalo's a surprise. The way they handled Oakland, 34-14. That's still a really good Oakland team. I know they've had some ups and downs and injuries and things like that, but that's still a good Oakland team. I would say you guys have covered the AFC pretty well, but the NFC's got a couple surprises, including the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
At 5-2. I mean, the New Orleans Saints have pretty much become a caricature of the old New Orleans Saints when we expect the Super Bowl Saints and excellence under Sean Payton. They had become basically Drew Brees throws for 350 yards and they give up 40 points and they lose and they have a 500 season. That was pretty much who they were, and they have tightened up their defense, which you do that with the Drew Brees led offense, you're going to win games. And so 5-2 surprises me there, and I'll give you the other one. who was on the other side of the Houston game yesterday, Seattle.
Yes.
I want to take my hat off to Russell Wilson. Now, Russell Wilson doesn't play 60 minutes at that level. But Russell Wilson in the last couple minutes of a fourth quarter is a thing to watch.
Absolutely.
And that was yesterday's drive, which he left time on the clock. I mean, it was like, you know, you want to go back and do it again? He marched them downfield. It looked like it was about 80 yards with just pinpoint passing, right. A little bit of scrambling, just really good decision making. And he does this by himself. Mm. The reason Russell Wilson scrambles so much is because nobody's blocking for him.
Right.
You know, they have a bad offensive line. He doesn't have the running backs that he's not handing off to Marshawn Lynch or players like that. He doesn't have anything around him, and he manages to keep that team going. They're at 5-2, tied with the Rams, who also have to be considered a surprise in the NFC West. I mean, Seattle under Pete Carroll, you don't sleep on them. So Philly, no. Seattle, New Orleans at the top of their respective divisions. Minnesota too, which
Minnesota,
I can't figure that out.
Talks
That's
about.
The one I'm waiting for a shoe to drop on.
No one talks about Minnesota.
Yeah,
no.
for good reason.
I'm going to throw this one out there, which I don't think is hardly a genius observation. If they get in the tournament, if they get in the playoffs, Dallas will be a very interesting team. They'll be a tough out. I mean, Elliott is, I won't say unstoppable, but he's awful good. And if he's out there playing, you can't dismiss them either. To me, they'd be a real wild card situation.
No, I agree.
Quickly on, before we get off of the NFL, I want to talk about college football in a second, but what about what happened in Houston and the comment made by McNair, the owner, the inmates. I think the actual comment was we can't let the inmates run the prison,
right.
Which I always thought it was the inmates run the asylum.
It's supposed to be the inmates run the asylum.
I think it didn't help that he messed up and called a prison as well. I don't know if that is just tone deafness to the current, I mean, it clearly is to the situation, because when he said it, in the setting that he said it in, had to be the worst place you could possibly say it. Or if it's a reflection of, you know, older guys and the way that they talk. I know that was his defense. I know he ran right up to Vincent and apologized to him in front of him. You know, said to him, "Hey, I didn't mean it that way, and don't take it that way." He later said he was talking about the commissioner and the owners and not the players. But you saw what happened. You saw the protests. Is this where we are? Where every sentence will now be reflected in the national anthem, depending on
yes. The answer to that question, Mitch, I'd say is clearly is yes. And everyone has to think twice before making any utterance that could be remotely construed as insulting or offensive or anything else more than ever before. There's no, this is where we are. It just right. is. And it's a very volatile era that we're living in here. You know, I think about this. You know, I think about this about once a day. Yeah, you know, I'm a history major. I love history, but and the question has always been in history: do people influence? You know, how much do individuals influence events? You know, or is it the larger picture that sucks up the individuals? Colin Kaepernick, one man, one person, by making one statement of physical movement last year, is set off all this. One man, one person set off all this.
Right. Right. But Bob and Mitch, now there's a story, of course, out, sort of the irony of all this is that Kaepernick is kind of being shut out of his own movement. You know?
Yeah.
Which is not uncommon historically either, by the way.
Yeah. Well, not shut out of the NFL, but saying now that the meetings, you know, that his attorney is talking to Malcolm Jenkins, and so why, you know, my client has not been invited to the meetings. He's not been apprised. He and Eric Reed have not been, invited to the meeting. So I'm wondering, well, now what does all is the media is this movement disintegrating into this kind of chaos that we've seen before? Just getting back to the thing with McNair again, and Bob, I think I think we've all realized that anything you say, once you wake up in the morning and once you step out of your house, everything's in play. Everything.
And by the way, we're part of that. You go on Twitter, there is nothing that you can write, however innocuous that you think it is, that someone will not miss and see it their way.
Of course,
and read into something that you never remotely intended.
But I think
even if you're even if you're at a restaurant, that, somebody can you know be running their recorder and overplay it and all the rest.
But you know, Mitch and Bob, and I think that when you look at the columns you've written over the years, and let's say during the time of social media, I think the key is that there's nothing that you have not said privately or you know or tweet that you have not written in your column. And I think that's part of the key. I'm not going to write anything that I'm not going to, you know, that I'm not going to say anything in a tweet that I will not have said publicly or said in the course of doing my job.
Yes, but things do read differently than they sound. And you know, there is nuance. Otherwise, we'd all be communicating in the same form. You know, all books would be read out loud. There is difference between writing something down. There's difference between 140 characters worth of writing something down, and there's difference between saying things, because when you speak, you tend to relax. You don't examine your words. You speak in colloquialisms. You speak in expressions. You say things like, can't let the inmates run the asylum. Whereas if you put that down on a piece of paper, you read it and you go, nah, I don't want to say that. You have the time to reflect and erase it.
Right.
So in this world of instant, you know, instant comments, whatever I just said, whatever I said on a microphone, whatever I said on a radio interview, whatever, you know, or tweeting, which is as close as it comes to spewing, you're going to get more of these type of comments.
Well, I will say,
that's where we are.
I will say this as we end this thing. The first time I heard that, remember, I went to a historically black college, played at Morgan. The first time I heard that, I'm not going to let the inmates run this out, was from Coach Banks, my coach at Morgan. When we are kind of players, we kind of want to talk about different practice time and all that.
Right,
you know,
right.
He said, I'm not, you know, the inmates don't run the asylum. And later at Ebony Magazine, when, you know, with John Johnson, you know, and we had some notion of, you know, we wanted some rights or something. And John Johnson said the same thing. The inmates don't run the asylum. So, I mean, I think, A, that this is the idea that you're the employee, I'm the employer. I think with McNair, you're right, wrong time, wrong place, and he was imprecise in the analogy.
And you know, just the show, get to the specifics of it there, they're dredging up a quote that was attributed to Tex Schramm 30 years ago during one of the strike or lockout years, you know, about cattle,
right,
which employers were equated with cattle, just to to prove that it's just an ongoing mentality of how the ruling class owners view their employees in this regard, and to indicate that it's always been this way and it's never going to change.
And
I think
remember,
that's the moral
that was,
of the story
that was,
here.
That was Kurt Flood's famous letter to Bowie Kuhn to start this whole. He said in this letter, I am not. We're not cattle to be traded. I mean, you know. So you're right. This goes back a long time, and I think that's the fun. That should be the focus. That you are cattle. You know.
All right. Well, let's shift from words to rankings. College football. With bated breath, does everybody await the first college football official rankings by the organization that actually counts, as opposed to the AP, the coaches poll, the ESPN poll, and all the rest of assorted things together. So you got, first of all, it was a hell of a weekend. And I thought the game that tilted everything and threw everything out of balance was Penn State, Ohio
Absolutely.
State, a magnificent college football game. If you like college football, and JT Barrett was remarkable. Here's a highlight from that game.
Barrett looks, fires, touchdown, Buckeyes. Marcus Ball, JT Barrett.
That sound courtesy of the Big Ten on Fox. You know, it was on our podcast, I think it might have been last week, Bill, that you said, you know, JT Barrett, I can't get with him. He's not that great. You know, you're not wrong.
Me?
A lot of people said the same thing. That was a great, great, great college quarterback performance. He looked like an NFL player. His precision throws, his decision-making, his running, his stats were off the charts. And he has single-handedly, the defense had something to do with it, but he has thrown Ohio State back into the mix with that win over Penn State.
I have to throw myself under that bus and beg it to back up over me, because I am the one who on our podcast Friday said that I just don't. It's not reliable. This may be. Is there something wrong with me? I don't think he's reliable. I don't trust him. And you know, you couldn't be more wrong than that. So I publicly hereby, you know,
sorry, Bill. Did I disparage you irresponsibly? I take that back. Yeah, but I thought it was you.
Well,
I thought it was everybody.
I call him. It would have been me. Thank you, Bob. It would have been me.
That's what I meant. Yeah, well, anyhow, he has gotten Ohio State in the mix, and now. You know, Penn State one loss to Ohio State. Ohio State one loss to Oklahoma. Oklahoma one loss to not such a good team. What are we looking at in terms of, you know, the top four teams when these rankings come out, in your guys' opinion?
Well, Alabama, obviously. I mean, this all runs through Alabama. I know they've got I want to say they've got a challenge coming up, but it all runs through Alabama. You know, I think Penn State has got the goods, but, you know, you got to win these games. You know, you have to win these games. No matter how much I like Penn State and Franklin's a good story, you got to win these games. And Ohio State did exactly what they did. And Barrett, when you're talking, Mitch, I was thinking it's going to be another Penn State quarterback that doesn't make it. I mean, another Ohio State quarterback that doesn't make it. But, you know, this is college. And Barrett had probably, that may have been the game of his career.
All right, now here's my ranking. Clearly one, Alabama. Two, Georgia. Three, Notre Dame, and four, Ohio State. That would be my four. With
now,
knocking on the
door. Why would you put Notre Dame ahead of Ohio State?
Because they lost by 1 point to Georgia, and that game. That's all. It's just they're as good as Georgia. They lost by a point. They're playing great. I think the Adams is a legitimate candidate for the trophy. That's all. I think Notre Dame's resume. And by the way, their schedule. If they do win out. It will be an irrefutable resume that they'll have to be included. You can't deny them because they do play a killer schedule.
They play Miami still to go, which is a highly ranked team, and they pay Miami's going to be the toughest game, and they play Stanford still to go.
NC State's a ranked team. I mean, nobody's played a better schedule than them. But they haven't beaten.
Here's why I would not put them that high, because they did lose. To Georgia. They lost. Right. Yeah, they played close, but I'm not counting close games. There's too many close games. They lost. You know, otherwise, Penn State, what's the only blemish on their record? They lost by 1 point in the final second to Ohio State. They should be up there. Right. They have not, Notre Dame has not beaten a top four team. Ohio State has. So in my view, Ohio State, and they lost to Oklahoma, which basically you could argue is a top four team too. So I put Ohio State third, and I put Notre Dame fourth. Maybe I put them fifth, and have Clemson, who I just think is a better team than the loss that they had. Now, this isn't based on, you know, record and all the rest, but I just think Clemson's still a great team, and I think they're going to be there. As remember, you do have Ohio State still has to play Michigan, and Notre Dame's got those tough schedules. And don't Alabama and Georgia, don't they end up meeting? If they both win out in the SEC championship game, in the SEC title game,
right.
So you could have one of those. You could have one of those years where one plays two in an SEC title game, and if two beats one, then two just becomes one, and one just becomes two. You know, or one drops to four, whatever. That's going to be a little tricky, but they are going to have to play one another, so it's not going to stay as it is.
This is just a you know, checkpoint.
Since we have leeway, I'll make Penn State number four then.
Okay.
Yeah, you can do it.
All right. We got them in there.
You know, certainly using the same reasoning I'm using about Notre Dame versus Georgia, you certainly can apply that Penn State versus Ohio State.
Right, right.
Hey, before we get to our parting shots, guys, do you hate going shopping for clothes but still want to look good? Bombfell is an easier way for men to get better clothes. Fully personalized, every piece has been handpicked for you by your own stylist, who will email you his or her selections, which you'll then have 48 hours to make any changes or even cancel altogether. You are in total control. Then when you receive the clothes, you have 7 days to tell them what you want to keep. Send the rest back. Completely flexible. You can receive clothes when you want. You can pause or cancel at any time, and it's very simple to get started. You sign up. You tell them about yourself, your measurements, the things you like to wear. Number two, you set up your order. You tell them what you want in your next order, like I want two button-downs, a pair of jeans. You schedule it when you want it, or you can have them surprise you. Number three, you get a preview email. Your stylist will put it together, your clothing picks, send you a preview email. You can cancel or change anything you like. If after 48 hours you like it, they'll ship it. And number four, you receive your clothes. You have 7 days to try on after your shipment's delivered. before they charge your credit card. Pay for what you keep and return the rest. Shipping is free both ways. I've already gotten some of this stuff, and I have to tell you, since I hate shopping, this stuff arrived in the mail. My wife said, "What's that?" I said, "Oh, well, it's part of our podcast." She said, "That's a nice shirt." I took it out. I put it on. It fit. Then I got a pair of pants. I took it out, put it on. It fit. I wear it for a week. That's the way I operate with my clothes, and I'm all set. So it was very simple. You know, they had a lot of different styles. They say, "What do you want to pick? Are you casual? Are you this, that?" It was fantastic, simple, and it comes right to your house. So they have a special offer now. If you go to bombfell.com/reporters, and you can get $25 off your first purchase. That's Bombfell, BOMBFELL.com/reporters. Bombfell.com/reporters. Bombfell, open and clothes. All right, let's go to our parting shots. Bob leads off.
Death and taxes are said to be the two life guarantees. Well, here's the third. The first draft pick of the Philadelphia 76ers will not be able to play much as a rookie. The 2014 pick was Joel Embiid, who missed all of 2014-15 and 2015-16 with a broken navicular bone in his foot. Then he was only able to play 31 games last year, long enough, however, to show his great talent. Last year's number one pick was Ben Simmons, who sat out the entire season with a fracture of the fifth metatarsal bone in his right foot. He, too, now looks like a keeper. Which brings us to this year's number one overall pick, Markelle Fultz, who was looking completely lost coming off the bench and who has now been diagnosed as having, quote, soreness and scapular muscle imbalance in his right shoulder, unquote. He is out indefinitely. Now, somewhere out there in college basketball is a young man who, when he hears his name called by the Sixers next June, should consider going to med school.
Tuesday is the NFL trade deadline. In other sports, those words signify a seismic shift in fortunes. Baseball teams trade away the future for a pitcher who can get them to a title right now. Hockey teams throw in the towel and trade star players in final years of their contracts. And the NBA requires a calculator to track how many teams are salary dumping, draft pile stocking, and cap jockeying at the trade deadline. The NFL? It's a wet firecracker. The tough constraints of the NFL salary cap make big trades almost impossible. You see a defensive back going here or there, a left tackle shifting cities, but you're not seeing Ben Roethlisberger traded for six future draft picks. The NFL's equivalent of trading day probably comes in the offseason when they don't renew players' contracts, or the end of the preseason when the final cuts are made. GMs are charged less with who they'll horse trade with than who they'll sign, or who will sign with them. Is it better or worse? I'll say better, if only because the lack of big activity in the NFL trade deadline keeps sports talk radio from having countless football fans beginning their calls with, "Hey, I got a trade for you."
I watched Game 5 of the World Series for a second time this morning, just to make sure that I really saw what I saw. Home runs, comebacks, and plenty of drama. For good measure, I watched highlights of the Seattle Seahawks game against the Houston Texans to savor the shootout between two outstanding young quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. Before that game, members of the Houston team took a knee in protest of comments their employer, Bob McNair, made comparing football players to inmates. Many fans have complained that their enjoyment of sports has been interrupted when these outstanding athletes remind them that they are also thinking, feeling human beings. Now, this is not a new phenomenon. Muhammad Ali was a great boxer, but he also had a conscience. Curt Flood was a great center fielder, but he also had a sense of fair play. Tommy Smith and John Carlos were great quarter milers, but they reminded us in dramatic fashions in the 1968 Olympics that they also had a sense of social justice. Perhaps the lesson of the 21st century is that we can't separate athletes from activism. We can't escape. As Joe Louis said in another time and place, you can run, but you can't hide.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. Please join us on Friday for our next edition. We do this every Monday and Friday. Check it out on iTunes Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you do like what you hear, please leave us a review. I always enjoy reading those. Or tell your friends to tune in as well. We've enjoyed being with you. And for Bob Ryan and Bill Roden, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.